Mission to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. I'm your host this morning, Richard Rutledge and
Nate Mizell.
We are glad that you have joined us today as we continue this study. Today we get to be in the book of Daniel. We're going to be in chapter 6, so hopefully you'll have your Bibles handy. We'll be able to open those up and follow along in the text. Notepad if you'd like to be able to take notes, but if not, just listen as we go through. We like to start things off as normal. I want to remind you of events that are going on in the Brotherhood that we've been made aware of. And we have a few, I think, Nate, this morning. A couple gospel meetings that started yesterday. One of those is over at the Central Church of Christ in Athens, Texas. And they have Brian Braswell. He's conducting this gospel meeting. The theme, Biblical Events That Shaped Our World. Now, this will run through Wednesday. And so tonight, tomorrow night, and Wednesday night, 7 p.m. at the Central Church of Christ in Athens. And they're located right there at 1408 Cream Level Road. Tonight, The Life of Christ. Tomorrow night, The Church of Christ, and Wednesday, the revelation of the mystery of Christ. And so they would be glad, I know, that if you were able to make it over to the congregation there in Athens.
All right, next we got, looks like another gospel meeting, and the topic is What's Right with the Church. The speaker there is Billy Bland, and it's going down in Maybank, and it's October 22nd through the 25th, and the sermon topics started yesterday morning, but you can go this evening, and the topic will be Right Time and Place of Establishment, and tomorrow evening will be Right Destiny, and Wednesday will be Right Mission. And if you have any questions, you can call at 903-887-0311, and today and through Wednesday it starts at 7 p.m.
All right. And then the fourth annual TGRN lectureship is just around the corner. The lectureship and banquet is scheduled for November 4th and 5th here at Mount Vernon. So we want to invite you to come and to be a part of that. We'd love to have you in the area with us. As usual, it will be broadcast live here on the Gospel Radio Network, but we'd love to see you face-to-face, have you at the banquet, be able to sit down and have a meal and hear information about the network. But this year, we're going to be looking, go you into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. The gospel is for all is our theme. And we have Mark Arroyo. He's going to be here Saturday morning at 10 a.m. 44 Hand will follow him. Marco has The Gospel is for All. 44 Hand has The Gospel is for the Aged. Then we're going to have our Friends and Broadcasters and Supporters Banquet following that, where we'll feed barbecue that day. At 1:30, Bruce Ligon, The Gospel is for the Lost. And Dan Baum, The Gospel is for the Hurting. We're going to have R.J. Tracy, one of the students from Memphis. He's going to have The Gospel is for the Young, Sunday morning, 9:30 a.m. Wade Webster, 10:30 a.m. Sunday morning, The Gospel is for the Saved. And then Chris Groda, one of the Morning for the Masters hosts here, will have The Gospel is for the Blessed at 1:30 p.m. If you need information, you can contact us by calling 844-4-FOR-TGRN or TGRN.org. There'll be information on there, or shoot us an email at office@TGRN.org. If you want to speak to us, call 903-537-4129 as well.
All right, next we have a Ladies' Day. The speaker is Catherine Baker, and the topic is Peace in the Valley, and it's going to be at North Jefferson Church of Christ in Mount Pleasant, Texas. It's going to start November 11th at 10 a.m. Registration begins at 9:30 a.m., and lunch is provided. And if you would, RSVP by November 4th, and the number is 903-572-1136.
And then don't forget that we have our annual Northeast Texas Bible Bowl that is in progress right now. We've only made one meeting. We still have several to go, so you could join us Monday, November the 13th. That will be at the North Jefferson Church of Christ, Mount Pleasant, Texas. That's where we have our testing center on a regular basis. And we will be in 1 Corinthians 5 through 8 at that period of time. So we would love to have you come and be a part of that. And if you'd like to talk to someone about joining us in the Bible Bowl, why don't you give them a call? Give Chris a call at 903-537-4129, and he'll fill you in with more information about that. Did want to mention one brief note. We had a visitor yesterday, Rafael Barrentes, and Rafael is the director of the Costa Rican Theological Institute. It is a preacher training school that is going to be located in Costa Rica. Things are set to kick off. Doors are set to open January 2018, and he is planning a great work there. It's overseen by the elders of the Greenfield Church of Christ in Greenfield, Tennessee. And you can get more information. Just go to, give them a call for the elders, 731-514-6672, for more information about this work, if you're looking for something to help out with. Well, that's what we have on the bulletin board this morning, but I want to, we're going to take just a brief break before we begin our study. So get your Bibles handy, turn to Daniel chapter 6, and we will meet you there in just a moment. Morning and welcome back to Mornings for the Master here on the Gospel Radio Network. Again, we thank you for joining us as we continue our study through the Old Testament in 2017. Today we are in Daniel chapter 6. Had the opportunity Monday last to have Daniel chapter 1. These two chapters are entwined so much because we see a trial that takes place with Daniel. In both of these, remember, we had these events, key events, Daniel 1, Daniel 3, Daniel 6, where we see some of these things that are happening with Daniel and his compadres there in chapter 1. We have, remember, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as they would later be named. But then in chapter 3 is where their faith is tested. In chapter 6, we're going to see Daniel put to a test. A lot of times we'll look at Daniel chapter 1 and we'll use it as an example, talking to our younger folks, even as you, Nate, or younger, because when we read Daniel chapter 1, many believe that Daniel was maybe, you know, 15, maybe 17 years old, somewhere around that range, as he has, Daniel chapter 1 says in verse number 8, that he had purposed in his heart not to defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies. And so he has made a choice. He has done, and we'll use that and show our young people, even as Paul mentions over in 1 Timothy chapter 4 in verse number 12. Let no man despise your youth, but be an example or of and to the believers. And Daniel does this in chapter 1. And it's a great way for us to illustrate that to younger folks of being faithful even in difficult trials. But Daniel chapter 6 is one that is great for our older people. And I think at times we forget that because sometimes people have seen portraits or you know, the artist rendering of Daniel in the lion's den, and it shows a young, strapping young man, if you will, that is there in the lion's den with those at that period of time. But when we look at it, in all actuality, Daniel is up in his 80s at this period of time. It is an encouragement for older people to continue to be faithful, even in the latter parts, no matter what you go through. And just as the book of Joshua, Joshua 14, to me is a great encouragement for older members, that they still have a work to do, because it was there that Caleb in chapter 14, verse number 10 says, "Now here I am this day 85 years old, and yet I am as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in." He says, "Now therefore, give me this mountain which the Lord spoke in that day. For you heard in that day how that the Anakim were there, and that the cities were great and they were fortified. And it may be that the Lord will be with me, and I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord said." I always think back there at Caleb, and here he is, 85 years old, and he says, "God promised me that mountain, now give it to me, and I will lead the battle against the Anakim, the giants, the ones who had scared the children of Israel so much that they would not go in." And he says, "I'll be able to do it." An older gentleman. Here, Daniel, even 85, 83, whatever he may be. Some actually think that he even may be even older than that. But he's at least in his 80s in all actuality. And that's where we see him in this chapter of Daniel chapter 6. We also, as we go through, we've already seen a turnover in the kings that Daniel was serving under, these leaders. He had originally been deported and imprisoned under Nebuchadnezzar, and then he would also be under Belshazzar, and that would be his son, Nebuchadnezzar's, and that's where we see the handwriting on the wall, and he had been weighed in the balance and found wanting, he was told by Daniel. But now he is under Darius at this period of time. He's going to be under a Darius. Now, even to understand some of the implications with Darius, Darius is just a title name. And when we look at what his name means, it actually means the owner of the scepter. And this Darius is one, probably not Darius of the Medes, because he died not long after Babylon was captured, but another Darius that is appointed by Cyrus, who is the king of all of Persia at this period of time. And so Darius is serving under Cyrus. And with that, that's going to make it a little more difficult for him to undo the law that he has implemented that we're going to see here. Now, let's look at this chapter now, and we're going to go through it, and we're going to dissect it up into certain ways. We're going to outline it as the politician's plan, verse number 1. We'll see Daniel's prayer in verse number 10, the king's punishment in verses 11 through 17, and then the remainder of the chapter, 18 to 28, we'll just call that God's protection. And so let's start out with the politician's plan, verses 1 through 9.
It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave though to setting him over the whole realm. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, "King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom and the administrators and satraps, the counselors and the advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the dens of lions. Now, O king, establish a decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree."
All right. It puts us back now, and it shows us that now Darius is the one who is making this decree. And as we mentioned a moment ago, Darius, the owner of the scepter, that's what his name means. He is the one at this point in time that is now in charge. If you back up, it says, "Now Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old." And we mentioned that this, you know, is possibly not even the same Darius, but because of the fact that he dies shortly after that event takes place. But it says that Darius now has appointed the governors and the lowers, the satraps that are underneath him. Daniel is one of three. But Daniel now, just as we saw earlier on in chapter 1, Daniel is an individual who distinguishes himself. He is envied because of it, but it tells us that because of his excellent nature, excellent spirit that was in him, is also what we see earlier in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 20. God's going to be with him, and so he is better than the rest in this situation. These satraps are actually, the word means a kingdom protector, kingdom protector. So they are the ones of that nature. He is one of three commissioners or governors that are over them. But now, verses 4 and 5, it says that these individuals envied him greatly because, why, I believe? Well, it says, because the king took thought or gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Because of that statement, he distinguished himself, and the king thought, well, let's just make him over everybody and get rid of the, you know, right now it's over three governors. He's going to set him over the whole realm. And verse 4 says, so, there's our reason. So the governors and satraps sought to find charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they couldn't. They could not. It reminds me even as Paul instructs in the household codes in Colossians and Ephesians of how the servant is to be concerning his master. He is to serve him not with eye service, as men pleasers, but as though he is serving the Lord, and he's going to be faithful as a servant. And Daniel is just that. He carries out his task as assigned on a regular basis and does not falter in it, so they cannot find fault. Some reasons why, maybe. Why do they seek to do this, and why are they so envious of Daniel himself? Well, there's several things that are possible. One is the fact that, as we already mentioned, he's 85. They could be looking at the fact that he's getting old and ready, needing to be replaced. They're jealous because he has this. It could be because he is a foreigner. He's neither Mede nor Persian. And we're talking about the Medes and the Persians here. Remember, he was one who had been taken away in the Daniel chapter 1 with the sacking of Jerusalem, or the taking of the prisoners of Jerusalem at that time by Nebuchadnezzar. But also, mainly, is it because of his character. They could find no grounds for accusation or evidence to support it in this. When we look at the fact of that, Paul tells in 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse number 12 that all who will live godly will suffer persecution. And here he is a godly man living without corruption, and they could not find anything to say against him. So the only thing that they could do, he said, the only way that we'll be able to do this in verse number 5 is unless we find it against him regarding the law of his God. Unless we figure out a way to attack his faith. And he was so faithful and predictable that they were able to use that to entrap him. Now, I think about that at times. Would we be that way? Is our faith that predictable? If somebody wanted to kill us, would they know where to find us Sunday morning? Would they be able to go, oh, I know where he'll be, and therefore they would be able to act upon it? Well, some would not. Mm-hmm. But Daniel was, and so they devised a plan. And they overwhelmed Darius in the number as they approached him. All of them came or would approach him. And notice what it says again in verses 6 there. So these governors and satraps, so the other two governors, because remember there's three governors, the 120 of the satraps, all came before the king. And they tried to flatter him to begin with as they approached him. O King Darius, live forever. And all the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors, have consulted together to establish a royal statute to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. So now all of these, the other two governors, the 120 satraps, came in and they said, you know what? We all got together, the administrators, the satraps, counselors, advisors, and we all consulted together, and we came up with this law. And this law states that for 30 days, you, King Darius, are above any god. You cannot, Daniel could not petition by this law Jehovah God, the true God. No one could petition their little g gods or any man. So he was elevated up. It was this realm of flattery that was placed before him, an elevation that was given to Darius. And so Darius thought, well, look at everybody wants this. And so, what does he do?
Whole bunch of just a lot of people just trying to figure a way out to take down one guy.
That's it. You know, it is complete jealousy on their part and envy that now they're going to do this. And they do it in a backdoor way by saying, you know, oh, King, we love you. King, live forever. And so, make this decree. And it had nothing to do with King Darius. They try to present it in the way that it's all about the king, but it's all about Daniel.
They're using him.
Right. And they're using the king. And so they also say, make this decree and sign the writing so it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians. And that was the law of the Medes and the Persians. And that's what we see over in the book of Esther. We see it here in the book of Daniel, where when these decrees were made, you couldn't just say, okay, we're going to revoke that law. There had to be something else. And that's why in the book of Esther, you see the king writing another law saying that the Jews can then rise up and fight against those who were going to be able to kill them that day. But here, Darius has given this law or going to sign this decree there, verse number 9. He does. It cannot be changed. It would be very difficult for him to change it as well because of the fact that not only was it the custom, but it is also he is serving under Cyrus, king of Persia, at this time. So he would also have to, go through him and do all of that. Now, look at verse number 10. Let's read 9 or 10. Now, politician's trap, verses 1 through 9, Daniel's prayer, verse number 10.
Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home, and in his upper room with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God. That was his custom since early days.
All right. Now, here is the character of the man Daniel. Is demonstrated here by his action. To begin with, Daniel knew that the writing had been signed. When he knew that it had been signed, he went home and he prayed. Now, there are several things here. First of all, we need to go back to or look at the very last clause in this sentence, as was his custom since the early days. Daniel went home and prayed as he had always done. He didn't do it in spite of, he didn't do it because of the law had been signed. It was his custom that he always did this. In America today, we see a lot of people, they get in an uproar when maybe the government makes laws infringing upon rights that individuals have in our country. And rightfully so, to be upset when our rights are infringed upon. But they make a big deal about it because their rights have been infringed upon, but they never used them before. They're like, oh, now you're going to do that, so I'm going to now make a demonstration about it. That wasn't what Daniel did. Daniel did not alter his daily routine in any shape, form, or fashion. He did what he had always done. He was faithful before, and he was faithful after the law. And so Daniel, he goes home, and he prays as he had always prayed, and he prayed openly. We talk about the idea that people are talking about, they get so upset because they took prayer out, saying you can't have prayer in public school, or you can't have, but they weren't doing it before. They want to meet around the flagpole now, but where were they before? Or, people get upset about the Supreme Court and what they have allowed with homosexuality, but they didn't say anything about the millions and millions of adulterous relationships that are just as sinful in the eyes of God as any other. But people get in an uproar. Well, he did as his custom, and he went and he prayed openly. His window was open to Jerusalem. Now, he wasn't doing it to be seen of men. Remember, Jesus speaks about our prayer, Matthew chapter 6, that it is to not to be seen of men, or for that purpose of being seen of men, so that they would, praise you or whatever. He prayed reverently. It says he knelt down on his knees. He bowed down before God. He was praying habitually 3 times that day, and he was praying gratefully, gave thanks before his God as was his custom. He was, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 17, he was praying without ceasing. And we see here a righteous man who prays because it is a privilege of the righteous to be able to petition God in prayer. Proverbs 15 and 29, the Lord is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. Or 1 Peter 3 and verse number 12, for the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against them that does evil. It is a very powerful avenue that we have to be able to petition God. I believe Philippians 4 and verse 6 really plays out here as Daniel, it says, prayed three times, as was his custom was, giving thanks to God. In Philippians 4 and 6, Paul says, be anxious for nothing, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And so he does. We know the benefits of prayers of the righteous. One of my favorite passages about prayer and the prayer of a righteous man is where Paul, writing to Philemon from a prison, he says in Philemon verse 22, he says, but withal prepare me a lodging, for I trust that through your prayers I will be given to you. And he prayed. And he, here, Daniel prays, giving thanks to God, as was his custom. He knew that the decree had been signed, so therefore he knew what the consequences would be. And that's what we see over in the book of Acts, in Acts chapter 5. As Peter and the others stood up and said that we ought to obey God rather than men, after they had been beaten because of their faithfulness, they're going to obey God always. It says in Acts chapter 5 and verse 40, it says, and they called the apostles, beat them, then commanded them that they should not speak in the name of Jesus, and let them go. And they departed from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer the shame for his name. And daily in the temple and in every house, they ceased not to teach and preach Jesus Christ. They said, don't do it. They did it. They beat them for doing it. They told them, we're going to obey God, not man. They beat them for doing it, and then, after they left, they kept doing it. This is where Daniel is right now. Daniel is going to continue his regular custom, even knowing that there are consequences. And so, the politician's plan we looked at in verses 1 through 9, Daniel's prayers there in verse number 10. Now, the king's punishment is verses 11 through 17.
Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And they went before the king and spoke concerning the king's decree. Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the dens of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. So they answered and said before the king that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, does not show due regard for you, O king, and for the decree that you have signed, but makes his petition three times a day. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself, and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians, that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring, and with the signets of his lords that he proposed concerning Daniel, might not be changed.
All right. Now, when we notice Daniel has gone home, he's prayed, but notice what these men did. They had laid in wait, because it says, now then these men assembled, and they found Daniel praying and making supplication. They caught him in the act of praying. You know, did they go through his house? Did they look through his window? Remember, he opened his window as it was his custom, and he prayed toward Jerusalem. That was his regular custom. And so here they are. They've gathered up, and they said, okay, you know, he signed the law. Daniel's at the house. Let's go. And they found him there. And so now they go back, and they're going to tell the king. And before they just go in and say, hey, you know, we called Daniel, they remind him. They say, wait a minute, king. Didn't you sign a law that no one could pray except to you for 30 days? And he said, yes, that's true. That's the law. And it was written according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, and there, no one can change that. But then they said, well, that Daniel. Now, here again, why, you know, the fact that one of the motives, remember that he was a just man, a man of good character, but also he was a foreigner, and they bring it out here because they say that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah, he's not one of us, he's not a Mede, he's not a Persian, but remember, he's one of those of the captives of Judah, and he does not show due regard to you, king. Now, that, again, here's where they're stirring it up. They are, these men are not concerned about King Darius in any shape, form, or fashion. They have used King Darius to implement this law, but they're still playing along. And they say, well, he doesn't even regard you, king. He's disrespecting you, like they themselves had respect for him, but he didn't. He has no regard for you, O king, for the decree that you have signed, but he now, not only does he pray, but he prays three times a day. And when the king, notice what it says, verse number 14, though, when the king heard these words, he was upset with himself, not Daniel. When the king heard these words, he was greatly displeased with himself because, you know, Daniel, he liked, he cared about Daniel, and he sets his heart to deliver Daniel. He's going to start looking, and he's going to try everything that he can to get this punishment taken away so that Daniel doesn't have to endure it. He works night and day and vigorously, it says, to try to overthrow it. But in verse number 15, they remind the king, you can't do anything about it. These men then approach the king. Okay, he's labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. That didn't work. And these men approached him and said, king, you know that the laws of the Medes and the Persians, that the law can't be changed. And so the king had no choice. And he brought Daniel, and he cast him into the den of lions. But he told him, your God, whom you serve continually. Again, Darius knew it just as much as his enemies knew it, that Daniel was going to serve God continually. There wasn't a moment in time. You know, it wasn't Sundays and Wednesdays that he served God. He served God continually. He was faithful all the way through. And he will deliver you. It, you know, reminds me of Daniel chapter 3. It was there in Daniel chapter 3 that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, as Nebuchadnezzar had set up the golden image there, that he spoke to them, and, you know, they respond in Daniel chapter 3 and verse 17, that, or verse 16, he said, we don't need to even answer you in this matter. But in verse 17, they said, if it be so, that if our God, whom we are able, or who is able to deliver us from this fiery furnace, then he will deliver us out of your hand. But they said in verse 18, but if not, let it be known that we will not serve your gods. And here, you know, they said, God's able to deliver us. Darius says, your God is able to deliver you. And he is able. And he did deliver them. And it may be the fact that even Darius remembers the things that had happened previously as the decrees had been written under the previous leaderships. In chapter 3, you know, with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, God delivered them. There, God delivered them, and a decree went out showing this. It may be the fact that he knows that the God whom Daniel serves continually is the God that gave him that interpretation there at the feast of Belshazzar when Belshazzar was taken out of the kingdom. But he said he will be able to deliver you, but he had to place him into the lion's den. And then the stone was brought and laid in the mouth of the den, and the king kissed, the king sealed it with his own signet ring and the signets of the lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel may not be changed. And so now it is placed over there. It is sealed. It has the king's mark and all of their marks on it. So if anyone were to open it, there would be evidence of it, that somebody else had broken that seal and gone in or gone come out. And the accusation, even as the Sadducees and the Pharisees wanted to be made about Jesus, trying to convince the guard to lie, telling the guards to lie that his followers came and stole his body while we were asleep. Here it is placed on there. Well, verses 18 through the end of the chapter, we're going to witness God's protection.
Now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought before him. Also his sleep went from him. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you've served continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you." Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God. And the king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Then King Darius wrote to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, "Peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian.
All right. Now, here we see God's protection in the case of Daniel. The first thing that we notice, though, is something about Darius that night. There in verses 18 to 20, Darius was concerned. Okay, he again liked Daniel. He liked him a whole lot. He tried to figure out until the sun went down a way of revoking this law, of changing this law. That didn't happen, so he said, "Your God's going to care for you," but we see that he is anxious and worried. It is the fact that, you know, he, even though stating that, is not a man of faith. He's not a man of God. Daniel is the faithful man of God, but he is concerned. Now, it says, how do we know that? Because he was fasting all night, and no musicians are brought in, and it says his sleep escaped him, went from him. He gets up early in the morning, probably far before dawn, and he runs, makes haste to the den of lions. And you read that he cried out with a lamenting voice. a troubled voice. He was concerned. He's worried. And he says, Daniel, servant of the living God. Again, Daniel is the servant of God, the living God, the true God. Has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? He asks a question from one side of the door, and I wonder if he was really expecting an answer. And then he hears the answer, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouth of the lions, and they did not hurt me, because I was found innocent, and I had done no wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. I was sentenced to this because I did what was right. And therefore, he was saved. The response of the king was that he was exceedingly glad because of that. And he's taking up out of the, look at verse 23. He was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatsoever was found in him. Not any injury whatsoever. Just as we see in chapter 3, as Nebuchadnezzar looked into the lion's den, and he said, did not I put three in there, into, or look down into the furnace? Didn't I put three into the furnace? How come is it that I see four walking about? He had sent his angel, the angel of God, to deliver Daniel. And he had done so, but as he's taken out, there's no injury or hurt, just as in chapter 3, verse 27, their clothes didn't even smell like smoke. You know, there wasn't any singeing of the clothing, it says, or the, anything else. They had no smell of smoke. He is completely safe. It's not that he lived, you know, that they attacked him and he survived. That's not what it was. There was not a scratch or a mark or anything on him. He had, God, stopped the mouths of the lions and had taken care of him. We see God's care of the faithful, but in Hebrews 11 and verse number 33, it says, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, and stopped the mouths of lions. Daniel is delivered. But we also see his enemies, those politicians who had made this plan against Daniel, suffer the consequence. And they are then at that period of time taken, and they're cast into the lion's den as well. Verse number 24, and brought those men that had made these accusations, and them and their family, and they are cast in there, and immediately the lions overpowered them and consumed them. And so, again, that act is witness to the fact of God's protection of Daniel, that it wasn't the fact that these lions just weren't lines that were given to attacking the individuals, or they weren't hungry or anything of that nature. This showed the case that it was God who had stopped their mouths at this period of time.
And they also didn't they didn't just punish the ones that did that to Daniel. They took the wives and the children, which that's completely destroying their families.
Right, their generations, their heritage would be gone because of that. And we see something along those lines as well over in the book of Joshua, in Joshua chapter 7, with a punishment to the entire family with Achan. When Achan had stolen that Babylonian wedge of gold, and afterwards they and all that he had were taken and burned, as well as all of his possessions, it would carry on to their families. And that's what happened here. But the conspirator suffers the consequence that they had meant for their enemy. We see the very same thing in the book of Esther, in Esther chapter 7 and verse 10, where Haman had had gallows constructed in order to get Mordecai. Figured he was going to hang Mordecai on those, but he himself is hung in the on the gallows that he had constructed for Mordecai. In Psalm 7, verses 14 to 16, it says, "Behold, the wicked bring forth iniquity. Yes, he conceives trouble and brings forth falsehood. He made a pit, and he dug it out, and has fallen into the ditch which he had made. His trouble shall return upon his own head, and his violent dealing shall come down on his own crown." In other words, the individual, the wicked man who set the trap, is caught in the trap. And it is so. But at the end of it all, it tells us that God is exalted as he is in chapter 3. We see this, that, you know, the God who delivered, Darius said, is a God to be reverenced. And so he made a new decree. And this decree had to deal with, and again, he calls him the God of Daniel. And he is a living God and the steadfast forever, and his kingdom is one that shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure forever. So he tells them this. At the end of it, though, Daniel continues to prosper, and he reigneth in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So Daniel is blessed throughout it. Just a couple of thoughts, though. When we look back at the life of Daniel here and we think about a mature person, how can we be like Daniel? You know, dare to be a Daniel, we tell our young people when we talk about Daniel chapter 1. Well, dare to be a Daniel. Daniel was a man of excellent spirit, it tells us. He was a man that was without fault in his business dealings. You know, he conducted himself in a public manner that people knew that they were going to get honesty out of him, and integrity was found in him. He was a man of faithfulness continually. That was the only way they were able to trap him. Daniel was a man of continual prayer. That's what ended up in verse number 10, ended up getting him caught by this law, was his faithful prayer life. And because of that, we see even as Acts chapter 5, he was a man who would obey God rather than men, because he knew that the decree had been signed, and he prayed as he always did. He was a man of faith. And so we can dare to be a Daniel in that way. When we're young, Daniel chapter 1. When we're older, Daniel chapter 6. And when we make that decision early on, as the preacher says in Ecclesiastes 12, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, you start out early, then you can finish strong. And that's what we see with Daniel in Daniel chapter 6. Well, any final thoughts or comments today?
No, that'll do.
All right. Well, we are out of time today. We're glad that you have taken the opportunity to be with us as we were given this privilege of looking at Daniel chapter 6 today with you. And don't forget, you have listening opportunities throughout the day. Here shortly, Good News Today with Jim Dearman will be on, followed by Reflections Upon the Precious Book Divine. And then there are a host of opportunities with the Tolstar Archives going today. But I encourage you, as I do on a regular basis, I want you to find a new program that you haven't listened to and give it a shot. Go over to the on-demand section if you have to. If you can't make your schedule work out where you can hit one of the ones you haven't heard before, get it on the on-demand. Give them a try there, and I'm sure that you'll enjoy the study that you have with them. But we also encourage you, as always, to join us every weekday morning, 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, here from Mount Vernon, Texas, for Mornings for the Master. Tomorrow, Ryan will continue our study. Until then, we hope you have a great and a blessed day.
Been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.